Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 5 p.m., and that is Greenwich Mean Time, and today is February 19th. Well, I thought I would kick off today and look at Bitcoin. It has been rallying over the course of the last few weeks. It's coming back up towards the upper side of its most recent range, and that 4,000 level has represented an area of resistance over the course of the last 3 months. So if it can clear that, well, then we could start potentially talking about a rally back up towards the $6,000 level. And of course, that's a 50% decline or advance within the context of a medium-term decline. The one thing that I find particularly interesting about the Bitcoin market or cryptocurrency generally is it gives us just so many beautiful examples of crowd psychology at work and what we can really anticipate, both from acceleration, from bubbles, from the exponential pace of forecasts and how much people anticipate prices rising, then the decline. But now it's the time to start thinking, if anyone is interested in this market, about what's exhibiting relative strength. Because we have a low in Bitcoin, at least towards the end of last year, and there is the scope for at least a reversion back to the mean. What I find particularly interesting is not Bitcoin, but Ripple. And Ripple has got one very clear difference when we look at Bitcoin. It did not break down in September. So it's also firming. Bloomberg doesn't have a great deal of back history for Ripple, but what we have here is clear relative strength. And if this were after a bust in the financial sector or the technology sector, what I would be saying is the thing we need to look for is clear evidence of relative strength after a downward acceleration, because what happens in a crash is you get contagion. Contagion is symptomatic of people panicking in the market. They sell not what they want to, but what they can. And that creates downward pressure on everything. But it is the assets that are most attractive and those that people really want to own are those that bounce first. Well, Ripple didn't break down in September when the Bitcoin price went down from 6 to 3,000. So that's a really clear signal that we have relative strength in this market. So this is probably going to be a more interesting market to monitor than Bitcoin in the context of any kind of recovery that might take place. And considering the fact that JP Morgan is in the process of setting up what is effectively an intranet or a private cryptocurrency, well, that suggests that the big financial institutions, and I know that Citigroup is also getting involved in this sector, do see some value in blockchain. So that, I think, is worthy of our attention, particularly against the background where the banks are looking to innovate and to get one step in front of everyone else. Well, JP Morgan it has got a very similar pattern to the S&P 500 Banks Index, and it is right now in the region of the trend mean. When we look at the S&P 500, then that is also right in the region of its sequence of lower rally highs. It is above its trend mean, though, and it was in mildly positive territory so far today. So we are now only 20 points away from that psychological 2,800-point level. That represents the peaks we saw in October, November, and December. This has been an incredibly impressive rebound we've seen since Boxing Day. So that, I think, is worth considering, that we still have this very impressive rebound, and it has manifested itself in a very broad-based advance, which has been characterized by a high degree of our high breadth in terms of the market performance. It's also worth looking at the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index, because that led on the downside. That was the index that was most influenced by fears about the trade war. And even yet today, it still has toppy characteristics. But it is now squarely above the trend mean, and it is rallying back towards its peak value around 1,400 points. And it was in positive territory again in here today. What's particularly interesting is that NVIDIA, which had been among the best performing semiconductor shares over the last few years and had been the best performer on the S&P or on the Nasdaq 100 in 2016 and 17, has so far pretty much failed to rally. That's against a background where everything else has been doing pretty well. Then when we think about that, well, there is the fact that more companies are talking about producing their own artificial intelligence chips, and Facebook is the most recent of those. The share right now is firming from the region of the trend mean. That's particularly important because Facebook had been one of the shares that led on the downside. The fact that they are now exhibiting relative strength is a positive indication that some of the selling pressure is abating and that people are willing to support even the shares that had represented the epicenter of risk last year. Well, that's particularly true when we look at Tencent. The share had led on the downside. It had experienced a very steep decline. Now it is consolidating in the region of the trend mean. The Chinese market is really crying out for a provision of liquidity. Generally speaking, in China, bull markets tend to be state-sponsored. China has been squeezing money out of the financial system. It's been leaning on the property and infrastructure sectors, and they don't want to have a recession. So they're going to have to start providing liquidity. They're also attempting to widen the tax base. They're lowering taxes, but they want more people to pay them. Tax avoidance is a national sport in most countries, but that's particularly true in China, where people aren't particularly friendly to the idea of paying taxes, and there's still a lot of cash floating around. Well, the anti-cash drive in the Chinese market has been ongoing now for the last few years. There's a very considerable number of ATMs that no longer function or no longer stocked, and there is a significant issue as well with fake currency. Well, they certainly need to start providing liquidity, and the stock market is starting to tell us that that is what they are doing. So I think that's a rather significant outcome. The H share index has also been leading on the upside. It was in mildly negative territory in here today, but so far it has held this move above the trend mean, and that represents a break in the year-long downtrend. The Indian market has been pausing over the course of the last couple of weeks, but what we are also certainly seeing is at least some risk coming off here, not least because we just don't know what the result of the election is going to be. The Modi administration is doing whatever they can to buy the result. So they have lowered interest rates. They've appointed a new central banker. They have also tried to curry favor with the traditional supporters of the BJP party, which are the small-sized business owners, by introducing additional rules targeting Amazon and Walmart. But they have got to appeal to a much wider demographic if they're going to win this election, and most particularly the young people. Half of India's massive population of 1.3 or even 1.4 billion people is under the age of 25. So that does represent a challenge to appeal to that demographic and promising them a better standard of living is not enough. It has to be delivered upon. And the rupee has also been a little weaker at the same time that the stock market has. So we are, I think, pausing on the Indian market, but I think it's also worth highlighting that when we look at, for example, Reliance Industries, which owns the 4G network, and essentially Mukesh Ambani is the richest man in India, and whatever he says goes, the Reliance's share price has encountered resistance at the upper side of the range. There's some consolidation going on. An unwinding of that short-term overbought condition looks likely, but as long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. One reason, too, that I think we're going to see some stimulus in China is because a number of the overseas firms that rely on demand from the Chinese consumer have been pulling back. That was certainly the case with Blackmores in Australia today. As a producer of supplements with a substantial Chinese business, Blackmores is, I think, a reflection of spending patterns for the Chinese market. When we look here at the figures that last year, China represented 30% of their business. So that is a testament to the fact that Chinese consumers are buying less. Well, if they're buying less, that, I think, makes the argument for additional liquidity provision that more acute. So that looks to be quite likely. Now let's take a look at what's going on in Europe. We had at the banning of shorting in Wirecard, which personally I think is an overreach in terms of the regulator. Wirecard's not a systemically important institution, but the one thing that it was the best performing new tech company in Europe. The fact that it had become the subject of such concerted shorting, that was an insult to the administration, and not least because there was such a dearth of new technology companies in Europe that it just about all funds who wanted exposure to the European sector owned it. So it's certainly in their interests that that shorting be banned, but it is also a testament to declining standards of governance and then a reluctance to let market forces rule. The Euro Stoxx index is right in the region of the trend mean. It has now returned to both the trend mean, and it's almost at the lower side of the overhead trading range. Well, this is a rather key level where it needs to sustain a move back above the trend mean if we're going to see clear evidence of a return to demand dominance. And I think it is a little early yet to conclude that that is in fact the case. In Japan today, we had Kuroda saying that if the yen strengthens any further, that they will have to, engage in additional quantitative easing. Well, that acted as a tailwind to the dollar and also to the Nikkei. It's up only 20 points, and it is right in the region of the trend mean and the lower side of that overhead trading range. The second section hasn't quite unwound its oversold condition relative to the trend mean just yet. There is significant overhead resistance following that type 2 massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So it needs to sustain a move back above the trend mean. Now, when we look at the gold price, gold has been marching steadily higher over the course of the last few weeks, and then it broke emphatically higher in here today. So it is now approximating the upper side of its range against the dollar. It hasn't quite broken out yet. $1,400 is the big level for gold prices. But what I find particularly interesting is that gold is appreciating in an increasingly large number of currencies. So it is now really well established at a new high in Australian dollars. When we look at it in rupees, then it's also at a new high. And also when we look at it in renminbi, it's trending higher as well. So when gold is appreciating in most currencies, that's when it is among the most attractive assets. As a monetary metal, and against a background where the financial markets are discounting mechanisms for future cash flows, well, think investors are concluding that the tide of fiscal stimulus is only just getting started, that we're going to have fiscal stimulus as being a part of the policy playbook for an increasingly large number of countries. That's really a euphemism for a large number of countries spending more money than they've got. And the hedge against that is gold. So gold prices are rising in here. I was speaking with Ronald Peter Stoffel from Incrementum and the In Gold We Trust report today. He has been seeing a great deal of additional interest in gold from his customers. There's certainly a more bullish attitude in the wider market. And that's, I think, obvious when we look at the chart, particularly in view of the fact that prices have been ranging below 1400 since 2013. And there is a rounding characteristic. Personally, I thought the rounding characteristic was going to be resolved on the upside at the beginning, or at least the second quarter of 2018. I was wrong on that, but prices have rebounded admirably. And now the price is coming back up towards the upper side of this base formation. So this is getting very close to a do or die moment. Then when we look at some of the other the precious metals, well, silver prices are also steadying in here, and they were up 20 cents in here today. Silver has got a lot more work to do in order to clearly demonstrate a return to demand dominance, but it is now approaching the $16 area, and it is well established above the trend mean. Where we have fireworks is in palladium. Palladium prices are accelerating and closing in on that psychological $1,500 area. Well, I don't think the point is going to be lost on a lot of investors that the price is accelerating higher. Acceleration is a trend ending. The price has gone from 1800 to 1450 in a very short period of time. That if it gets up to $1,500, that's at least a point where we can get some reconsideration of the price potential. So this is, I think, the first clear downward dynamic is likely to represent a peak of at least near-term, if not medium-term, significance. But we're not there quite yet. Then let's round it out and look at platinum. The platinum miners have been under pressure. The South African Mining Union is calling on all miners in South Africa to join the strike at Sibanye. Platinum prices are well below the price of gold. In fact, if one were buying jewelry, platinum should be cheaper than gold, even in view of the fact that it is sold at a higher purity and is denser. On a size-for-size basis, it should still be cheaper than gold based on today's prices. And yet it is not yet above its trend mean. That really is a testament to the kind of influence that the loss of diesel has had on the price. Then I think what's happening with copper is also really worth paying attention to. The fact that the price is now breaking out of what is a 7-month range is a very clear signal that we are back in a demand-dominant environment, but most particularly that it is China is back on a stimulative footing. The fact that copper and the precious metals generally are firming up at exactly the same time that China is starting to stimulate once more is not a coincidence. So I think that is one of the big takeaways. That's particularly true when we look at the dollar. Because considering the strength that we're seeing, then the dollar was weaker in here today, but not in an especially dynamic manner. The one headwind that the dollar has now, though, is quite simple. It's that the Federal Reserve is beginning to walk back from its commitment to raise interest rates and to reduce the size of its balance sheet. So that is something that is going to represent a headwind for the dollar, because the commitment to reduce the size of the balance sheet was one of the clearest supply inhibitions and therefore supports for the price that had been evident for the dollar and had made really put the naysayers to its rally to shame. The fact that the Fed has now changed its tune, that's, I think, removing a support for the dollar. So even though it's hard to make a bullish case for the euro, well, the euro has been steadying from the lower side of its range, and it was up 27 ticks in here today. I think it's going to be an awfully big ask to see the euro back above 116, but there is the potential that we could get an additional rally over in the short term. Now let's have a look at what's going on in terms of treasuries. Well, the 10-year treasury yield has pulled back again in here today. Investors are increasingly of the opinion that the next major move by the Federal Reserve will be to cut interest rates and or potentially to re-engage with quantitative easing, or at the very minimum that the pace of balance sheet runoff is over. Well, that represents a tailwind for prices, and that's what we're seeing in the yield. Well, so far the 2.6% level has held. But we still have the sequence of lower rally highs. We have equal lows. And I think that the there is the potential here we're going to see some additional strength in the treasury market. The high yield sector has also been rallying in line with the equity markets. And it is now testing the sequence of lower rally highs over the last 2 years, and it is above the trend mean. So we're at a really critical juncture here for risk assets, particularly in stock markets. The stock market is right in the region of previous areas of support. Gold is coming back up towards the upper side of what is effectively a 7-year base formation, or at least a 6.5-year base formation. So this is approaching now an area of potential resistance on a significant number of risk assets. The big question that has been underlying the market for much of the last few years has been the question, where is the additional source of liquidity going to come from to fuel this advance? Well, I think we're increasingly getting the answer that economies are transitioning away from monetary stimulus towards fiscal stimulus. That could, in fact, reduce the size of balance sheets on aggregate, but it is also going to be a source of major liquidity for their respective economies if they move towards fiscal stimulus. But what we've also seen is, despite the fact that the balance sheet totals is down $108 billion in here today, that is much more to do with the weakness of the yen rather than any other particular factor. So I do think that the most likely scenario is that we are going to see additional liquidity provision. That is likely to be positive for risk assets, but risk assets are somewhat overbought in the short term. And we are nearing areas of resistance. So I think the potential here is that we're in for some consolidation in the near term. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.